Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, I'm Jackie Cation. You are about to listen to the Dork Forest. Let's give you the info about it. First of all, you know the websites. DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com, if you like a determiner, JackieCation.com has everything. All of my podcasts, including videos of my stand-up schedule, merchandise you can purchase if you would like, and a lot more info than you possibly even need. Let's do the credits. Mike Rickberg sang and produced and composed that song at the beginning of the show. He sang with his wife, Sarah. It's very beautiful. At the end of the program, he sings his version of the Mexican Hat Dance. That's Mike Rickberg. Vilmos fixes JackieCation.com. He is the web designer over there. And Patrick Brady fixes the audio. And in this case, there's a video intro. Very exciting. Anyway, those are the websites. If you want to support the show, you're doing it already by listening to it or watching it. And another way is to tell your friends and family, go on iTunes, do a review. Another way is to just give me money. Yeah. You could go use the donate button. You can make it even monthly if you're okay with making things monthly. You do a PayPal monthly. There's a monthly choice on PayPal. The PayPal is a button on the Jackie Cation or the Dork Forest website, and it goes directly to me. Thank you very much. I will use it wisely or foolishly. Your call as well. Now, my email address, jackie@jackiecation.com, is where you can contact me if you have any questions or concerns and about the Dork Forest. And I do have a Venmo account. It's jackie-cation, oddly enough. Another way to support the show is on dorkforest.com and jackiecation.com. There's an Amazon link. And the Amazon link just takes you to Amazon. You order like normal, and it supports the show because you came from Jackie Cation or dorkforest.com. Very exciting. Other than that, there is a Bandcamp. You can, if you have listened to all the episodes that are free and you need more content, there are several live episodes that are at thedorkforest.bandcamp.com. And those cost me a couple of bucks, so I charge a couple of bucks. There's also a storytelling album there that you can listen to some stories that I did live. And there are 17 free episodes before the Dork Forest was pre-recorded. So the audio isn't very good, but the guests were super funny and fun and dorky. So if you want to do that, go to thedorkforest.bandcamp.com. Other than that, let's see if there are other things that I should be talking about. Possibly the merch. Yeah, if you want to buy merch. The only other thing I want to talk about is the merch. You can get Dork Forest t-shirts, and you can get stand-up comedy t-shirts. You can get my albums or my DVD over at jackiecation.com/merch. There's pins, there's a challenge coin, there's a bunch of new things happening over there. Anyway, a lot of information. I don't think I've missed anything, but who cares? Let's get into the show.
Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm in my garage. That's right, my little tiny garage room. Returning guest, you guys. Jeremy, it's Ween, right?
Yes.
I sometimes I go wine, but because I haven't talked to you in real life in so long, and I haven't seen you in New York in probably 2 years. So good to see you, man. Welcome to the program.
Good to see you, too. I'm such a big fan of the podcast, so it's always a thrill. And yeah, I was thinking about the other day how I believe, if I'm correct, I brought Dork Forest to New York for the first time as part
you
of the
podcast. You did. It was the live podcast, New York Podcast Festival. And I did it with Judah Friedlander regarding ping pong, if I remember correctly.
And then we did a second one. The first one was with Wyatt. And then,
with Bridget. Bridget Everett was in one of them. I think we might have done it three times. Because Bridget Everett's dorkdom was Barry Manilow, if I remember correctly.
Right. So, yeah, I think Wyatt Cenac, the first one.
And his was whiskey or something.
Yeah, and y'all talked about Janice from The Muppets.
Oh, that's right. Because here's the thing. I can remember people's dorkdoms. I cannot remember their names or their faces. It is quite a Dragon Riders of Pern dilemma. But Jeremy Ween, you, I know, I think your last time it was theater dork. And we could update it. But I like what you wrote me.
We actually, this is actually my first time on the podcast.
What? Oh, wait a minute. How did you get it?
Yeah, I've been. I think we started to put the wheels in motion on this a couple of years ago, and then I think something happened.
Oh, so it's a classic. The scheduling is genuinely the hardest part of the Dork Forest. But you're wearing the old school, now discontinued, Dork Forest logo in green. I've sold them out. Now I just have Ranger of the Dork Forest t-shirts in my garage. Feel free to buy those, Rangers, so that I can then print. I'm going to print essentially that design on a black t-shirt with green writing.
I'm looking at the magnet, too.
Sweet, sweet Ranger magnet. Those are totally discontinued. You got some old school stuff going on here. I can't believe. Anyway, it's Jeremy Wine. Ween, by the way, and it's at This Is My Show on Twitter, and you have try to get good helper theater stuff, Play Per View. Tell me about that first, just because I...
So the Twitter's at This My Show, no issues. Play Per View is a live streaming theatrical event initiative that was formed as a direct response to the COVID-19 pandemic. We do live stream theater reading events to support nonprofit theaters and community impacted organizations across the country. In our first 6 months, we've done 23 readings and we've raised over $100,000 for various causes.
Oh my God, that is amazing. And are people doing sort of a Zoom gallery, a table read kind of thing?
It's a little bit more produced than that.
That's awesome.
We have about like 10 hours of rehearsal. We've done readings now where there's video, there's sound effects. One of them we did, they're all live. And one we did in real time, we turned it black and white and we had like film grain. So it looked like a black and white movie in real time. We did a Dutchman by Amari Baraka with Uwe Hill and Jennifer Mudd.
Go ahead.
We decided to turn it into an homage to the original film version. So we put it in black and white. There was like film grain running through it. It looks really amazing. It was a lot of work.
So much. Okay, so this is all done, and this is done live streaming, live.
Yes.
Is there any sort of post-production, and then where can people go buy it at all, or is it a live event, one and done?
So there's no post-production. Everything's happening in real time. Our events are streamed live, in real time for one performance, and then they're archived and available for rental for 4 days after that.
Just 4 days.
So they are these really amazing little time
capsules. Oh, it's like seeing live theater. It's like seeing live stand-up on Zoom where you're like, no, this is it. This is, we don't know. I'm going to mention how Ben is blazing up when I go to gallery view, and you're just going to be there for that, and that's going to be it. That's so cool. That is, that's awesome. So pay-per-view, is it pay-per-view.com or?
Play-per-view. Yeah, it's a play, no pun intended. It's a play on pay-per-view. It's play-per-view.com, but it also has a secondary meaning. So it's spelled P-E-R-V-I-E-W, but it's also referencing the word purview as to have a view of a, of an idea or...
Oh my God, theater nerds! I love theater nudes! That's awesome.
I really dig it. And it's nice to kind of have that duality because, you know, the hope is that when all of this is back to normal, whatever that means, that we'll still be producing digital work, but hopefully being able to bring this into the physical realm as well.
Is it spelled like that? Play-per-view?
It is spelled like this.
Okay, just because I want to get it right in the notes. And, it's per-view. And it's one word, and it's not P-U-R, it's P-E-R-V-I-E. That's awesome. I am giggly about it. That's how great that is. Well played. Okay, so Cool. When's the next one?
Anything
on the books?
So by the time this comes out, I am not 100% sure what'll be officially announced. But we've got some like really cool stuff in the works.
So just go to that website do you have an email list over there?
Yeah.
One would imagine.
Email list. In 6 months, we've got 6,000 people on our email list, which is kind of amazing.
Rules.
It's cool. It's really kind of become this, like, it's been a lot of like testing and all this other stuff, but now we're consistently on Saturdays. So for some people, we're just like the Saturday thing that they do now. They don't really care what the play is itself. It's just like, oh, I can see theater in my living room for $5 a shot.
And it all benefits different charities. Is that true?
Yeah.
Are you also paying the actors and the writers?
Yes, everyone that's involved gets an honorarium for their time. So
good.
Everyone is...
Because there is no work. So if this is work, they should get some money for it. So that's great.
Yes. We've put honorariums in the hands of over 100 artists over the last 6 months. So,
yes.
And we're progressively working to increase that amount. We've already doubled what the payout was from when we first started, and we're looking to double that again moving forward.
All right. This is the best, Jeremy Wayne. But let us discuss the life and times, the work of a guy that whose name I know, but it is such a basic name. How could I not know it? Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith? I get him mixed up with the guy who did the Fantastic Fox. Isn't that a guy named Smith? No.
I think so. What is your reference point to Kevin Smith? Have you ever seen any of his movies or any of
maybe,
his stuff?
Maybe. Who? What?
So, I mean, if people don't know, Kevin Smith is really kind of notorious for this movie called Clerks. There's a big mythology about it he sold all his comic books, and it cost $27,000, and he made it with his friends and in the convenience store that he was working at overnight, and,
he's like the sort of the triumph hipster, but created hope for, because that I remember when that came out, it was huge. It was sort of like, did you ever see El Mariachi Rodriguez?
Yeah, it's a similar idea. It was the idea of like people taking a shoestring budget and just like not waiting for other people to open doors, and they're like, we're gonna go make this thing with people that we love to work with, and hopefully there are other people in the universe that dig what we're trying to do.
Right. I never have seen Clerks. How does it, have you seen it? I don't know how it ages, quite honestly. It may not. And that's not his fault, right?
Yeah. I mean, the last time I saw it was 2 years ago, and it was actually the first time I got to actually see it in a theater. I've only ever seen it on DVD or home video. They did this. So Kevin, throughout his career, has done these things called Vulgarthon. These are essentially like Kevin Smith film festivals. So they feature his work, and sometimes they feature the work of like his friends or people that like his company is producing, et cetera, et cetera. And they hadn't done one for a very, very long time. So they, Kevin had a massive heart attack a couple years ago.
How old is Kevin Smith?
He just turned 50. And he had a widowmaker two years ago. It's when one of your arteries to your heart. I'm pointing up here like this is where your heart is. up near my nipple.
Left.
It's actually for people that don't know, your heart is actually in the middle of your chest.
Okay. All right.
He had one of the arteries was 99% clogged. So it was like that, it's called a widowmaker. It usually takes you out.
Right.
You have a heart attack with that much impact.
Wow.
And he survived. And so they hadn't done this Vulgarthon thing in a really long time. So his buddy, Ernie O'Donnell, who's also in Clerks, reached out to him and was like, hey, for your birthday this year, we should do Vulgarthon, because he's he survived this massive thing. So we went to Red Bank, and it was really, I mean, it was really amazing. It was like being with like 300 other people that just love Kevin's work, and getting to watch, like, they took the original film lineup from the first one from like 98. And in one theater, it played in one order. And then the second theater, it played in the reverse order. And they did like Q&As after everyone. And so I felt really fortunate because in our theater, the last movie we saw was Clerks. So we had like back, we were doing the five movies backwards, and the other theater was doing the five movies forwards.
And which, what are the five movies?
It was, I believe it was Clerks. It was Mallrats. I think
I've heard of that too.
Dogma. And then
I saw Dogma. Okay.
This movie called Drawing Files, which is a smaller movie that he produced. One of his friends directed it. I think Vincent Peralta was the director of that movie.
Okay.
And then I can't remember off the top of my head what the fifth one was, because I was also kind of through all of this going in and out of the theater, because like all of the people that Kevin has ever worked with were just like hanging around. So like, you know, Brian,
that's what
O'Hall,
you get for living in New York and being in a theater, is that you get to see and meet all these people. Wow.
Well, they did this in New Jersey. They did this in Red Bank, New Jersey, where Kevin's
Oh, that's
from.
What Red Bank is. I don't know what Red Bank is. That's what, yeah. Oh, he grew up in New Jersey. Okay.
Yeah. He's a Jersey boy.
Are you from New Jersey?
No, I am not. I'm from South Florida. Probably the complete opposite of New Jersey. But that being said, you know, a lot of people that Kevin worked with on Clerks, they still live there. You know what I mean? Those were his friends and all the people that he like grew up with. So like, you know, the movies are playing and I'm kind of like popping in and out, because it's like, oh, Brian O'Halloran, who played Dante, is hanging out, and Ernie Klein, who was this guy in Clerks, and this person from the, you know, they're all just kind of mulling around outside. And so it's just kind of like popping in and out to just like see what's going on.
Ernie Klein, who is Ernie Klein, who did Ready Player One?
No, that's a different one.
That's a different guy named Ernie Klein? Okay. Because
yeah.
He was on the Dork Forest, that guy.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. So, wow. So, Cop Out. Here, first of all, Jeremy, let me tell you that who I was mixing Kevin Smith up with, because I do no research, was Wes Anderson.
Yeah, two very different filmmakers and personalities.
Yeah, because they're different people. But I can't tell. Are they white guys of a certain age? Because it's all a blur to me. But then I have that face thing, which I think also is called self-absorption. But let's do he did something called Tusk. Oh, did yes. Fanboys? Was that him?
No, he's in. He makes a cameo in that movie.
Okay.
Have you ever seen Fanboys?
No.
It's a really funny little movie that had like a really weird history with the Weinstein Company over Final Cut and whatnot. But the premise of the movie is about these guys that grew up loving Star Wars, and it's like 2 weeks before Episode One is supposed to come out.
That's Ernie Klein, I think.
Ernie wrote that movie.
Yeah.
I definitely believe Ernie wrote that movie.
And So tell me a story about Kevin Smith, and I'm going to look up Ernie Klein. So just because that's where I'm at.
Okay. I've been really fortunate to get to meet Kevin several times over the years, and I'll tell you a very recent story. In the middle of all this pandemic stuff, so in Kevin's movies, there's a fictional fast food restaurant called Moobies.
How do you spell that?
Moobys.
I knew it wasn't what I thought I heard. There we go.
So they decided, well, before the pandemic, they were planning on doing this this like pop-up restaurant. You know, they've been doing a couple of these in LA. It's the same people that did the Saved by the Bell one and the Breaking Bad one, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, so they decided, even with everything going on, they were still going to go ahead with it. And do all the social distance stuff, et cetera, et cetera. Concurrent to that, you know, I'm in a long distance relationship with someone in LA.
Congratulations and my condolences.
Very hard. Yeah. But so this is like about 3 months into the pandemic. And I was just like, I have to go see her because like, I just, you know, it's hard to do a long distance relationship. It's even harder when suddenly you're not seeing that person every 6 to 8 weeks because you're going here for work, et cetera, et cetera. So I was like, okay, I was like, I'm going to go and we'll go to Big Bear and like, we'll have like a social distance vacation, blah, blah, blah. And the dates timed out to when they were doing this pop-up restaurant. So I was like, okay, so I'll like hang back in LA for like a couple of days. So I sent a tweet out that was like, I never want my fandom question, my Kevin Smith fandom questioned. I'm going to movies in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah.
And he retweeted me.
What?
And he was like, no, think about your health. But I guess, you know, if you're going to come all this way, I might as well come by and say hi. So the man, again, this is in the middle of a pandemic. This man takes time out of his day to come down. When we went to the pop-up, he came down, took pictures with me and my buddy, talked to us for like a good 10 minutes. And it's like, he doesn't have to do that to start with.
Right.
Let alone in the middle of a pandemic. And I think that's what's so smart about Kevin is that like he understands fandom. Like he understands that, like, because he was one of us.
He was a fan, right? He's one of those guys. He's a guy that comes from that sort of nerd place, and then he becomes very popular. So he knows that he better, because he knows how long the memories are of, I mean, it's not why I'm available to Rangers of the Dork Forest, because I would also like to talk about your dorkdom, but it is partially that, because I know that we're all just a little bit obsessed in our own minds. And so who doesn't want to, like, are you kidding? When I met Cage Baker, I lost my shit. And this is my favorite science fiction writer. Anyway, same with N.K. Jemisin, my current favorite living science fiction writer. So I was in an elevator with her and I said, are you N.K. Jemisin? And she goes, Naomi, yes. And I said, I'm a very large fan. I'm a huge fan. And she's like, great. And then we left that elevator. Anyway, so you got to hang out with him and go to, what was movies though? What was it?
So it was like, in the films, it's like this McDonald's, Burger King kind of place. You know, Dogma, I think, is like where it first pops up. And it's, it plays this big part in the idea in the film, talking about like false idols and all of this other stuff. Cause it's okay. Their mascot is a golden calf.
Oh, okay.
So when you went, they had like a couple of things from that they've referenced in the films, like a cow tipper, which is like the Big Mac.
Okay.
And they had the recent Jay and Silent Bob's reboot. There's another restaurant introduced called Cock Smokers, which is a chicken place.
Okay.
So they had the Cock Smoker chicken sandwich.
Okay.
And then they had Hater Tots, which is another movies thing that gets referenced in those. So it's like a lot of like that geek food thing of like, oh, we're turning the things from the movie into like things you can actually have in real life.
Yeah. I think they do that at Universal.
Yeah.
For The Simpsons and stuff. It's excellent. Yep. Excellent marketing and all that. Mike, I think I get him and Mike Judge mixed up too.
Guys of a certain age.
I guess it's guys of a certain age who have a very, I mean, they're usually super smart, but also super dumb kind of senses of humor, right? Where it's like,
yeah,
this mix of you're like, oh, you're monumentally overeducated and you're also a 7.5-year-old child. And put those two together, it's awesome.
Well, or in the case of Mike Judge being a prophet and predicting Idiocracy.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, early.
Yeah, get lost, go away, I'm baiting. Anyway, so yeah, it's brutal.
But I think, you know, going back to the idea that he just gets it. I mean, think about the idea of Clerks when it came out. What other movie before that were characters sitting around talking about Jaws and Star Wars and like all this other stuff? You know, it really feels like, I know this is going to sound like a weird thing, but it feels like the first filmic representation of like, quote, nerd culture in a way.
Yeah, it could have been. I mean, where it's just sort of a celebration of it, right? Where you're just like...
Or just relatable on the sense of like, you know, how many, you know, one of the famous conversations in that movie is about, well, what about the contractors that worked on the second Death Star?
Oh.
Like, how often do you sit around, like, you go out to bars with people or you have your D&D night and those kind of conversations?
That's the conversation that you have. You're just like, you think about, it's like Star Trek Lower Decks, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that show is made specifically for me and you and our kind, who are very nerd, like Star Trek centric, you know? So that's awesome. Does he only do, I thought you said he did cartoons. Does he only do live action? No?
He does live action, but he had, so they turned the, this goes into my other nerddom, which is animation. They very haphazardly, so there's two interesting things. So Clerks, they originally tried to adapt as a live action series. Several years later, and the big thing about that is that what's his name? I believe in the pilot, Jim Brewer plays one of the characters, plays Randall.
Okay.
They didn't bring anyone from the film into this TV version, and it's floating around. It's on like the 10th anniversary DVD, etc.
Okay.
Et and so it didn't work. And then 5 years later, ABC again tries to turn it into a cartoon, which has a very infamous thing because the movie is very much an R movie. ABC is trying to create this like answer to The Simpsons. So, you know, in Clerks, Jay and Silent Bob are weed dealers. In the cartoon, they're fireworks dealers.
Okay.
and then like, there were only six episodes. They aired the sixth episode in production order second, which was a flashback episode to stuff that people had not seen at that point, which made it make even less sense.
Right.
'Cause they do the cliche. They both get locked in the freezer and
sure.
They're flashing back to everything. But because it aired second instead of like fifth or sixth, they're referencing all of this stuff that no one has seen. So the show gets canceled after two episodes.
Okay.
Because people don't know what to think of it. They advertise the show during the Super Bowl.
Weird.
Yeah.
So they're pushing it, but they don't put it out right.
But they also don't know what exactly they're like. They don't know what they want it to be, and like. It was crazy. Like Alec Baldwin is like the mayor of the town, and
what?
It's a really crazy. It's six episodes, and it's really funny because it's gotten a good amount of play. It was in because again, I have to imagine it's only six episodes. The licensing for reruns is probably not a lot, so
right.
it's run on Comedy Central in reruns. It's run on Adult Swim in reruns. You know, it's been around and around.
Right.
But it's so, that's what's funny to me when you look at like that was such an interesting period because it felt like when everyone was trying to chase after family, like The Simpsons and stuff, like,
yeah,
like what is our Simpsons? Because at that point, like past the Flintstones, like no one understood after The Simpsons, like how to get adult animated.
More of that.
On prime time.
Right. And then the Venture Brothers was created and it's outstanding.
And it's also not happening anymore. Because
right. But they essentially lifted that model, as far as I can tell, and moved it to Harley Quinn on DC. So I don't know if you've seen that.
Oh, I have. It's amazing. The fact that it hasn't been picked up for a third season yet, really.
is weird. It's very odd. And it's, I have to admit, super jealous that they got all male comics to do the voices, did not get any women comics to do any of the women voices.
Well, I will. Well, Wanda
make a note.
Wanda Sykes is on that show.
Right. She's a comic, but she's also a giant star. Like, I'm talking about Ron Funches and James Adomian, who are famous, and really good at what they do, and hilarious and wonderful, but not Wanda Sykes level.
Well, I mean, I already said this to you, and I can't really talk about it that much, but I am developing something that, like, you definitely are on our short list of, like...
Thank you very much. Yeah, I tweeted out, you guys, that I would like to do some voiceover work. Your animation, your audiobook, whatever, talk to me. That's right, Jackie at JackieGation.com. By the way, I am talking with Jeremy Ween, and I constantly want to go whine, but it's Ween, and it's Play Per View is the thing that you're working with to put plays online, and it's for charity, and it pays actors and people involved, and at this my show for people to follow you on the Twitter. So yeah. It's interesting about Kevin Smith and Mike Judge and Wes Anderson to lump them all together is to do them all a disservice, probably, because they don't need that. It'd be like saying that I'm Rosie O'Donnell, but it does both of us a disservice. but the crazy thing is like sometimes I know that I watch stuff like Clerks and I fear, this is what I fear, and has Kevin Smith addressed this? Is he part of the people that fixes this, where sometimes women don't feel comfortable, you know, in the nerd culture? You know how sometimes boys are mean sometimes, and they're like, oh, girls, we're at our He-Man honeycomb club.
I think he's someone that's definitely evolved a lot as a creator and a filmmaker. You know, going back to the Volgerthon thing, you know, it was rewatching some of his films that I hadn't watched in a while. And there are some stuff that you kind of go, oh, that's, and to his credit during the Q&A,
that's awesome.
He acknowledged all of it.
Literally that's what you want, right?
He acknowledged all of it. And, you know, I think a thing that really speaks to him as a person, you know, he's someone that had his career is because of the Weinstein brothers.
Harvey Weinstein, that guy?
Miramax released, well, Miramax is the one that picked up Clerks out of Cannes and is the reason that Kevin has a career. And to Kevin's credit, when all that stuff with Harvey started going down, he felt ashamed and embarrassed that he had any connection to him. And he made a commitment that his royalties on the films that were under the Weinstein umbrella, that he was going to be donating to an organization that helps promote women in film.
Okay. That's awesome.
So it's this organization that, like, you know, they do workshops with like female filmmakers and all this other stuff. And
I think that's real immense. That's like financial reparations kind of immense. That's the kind of, like, I've recently, this I'm going to weed off here. We'll give you a couple extra minutes, Jeremy. But the thing is I was talking to a friend of mine, and we were talking about how this country has got a problem where it cannot be honest with itself and its own history. And if we could somehow, you know, literally... You want to take the 12 steps from OA, from AA, from NA, from DA, from all of these anonymous groups and go, the United States is unmanageable. The United States needs to do an inventory of things that we've done wrong. And we want to make a list and somehow try to fix that. We do it as individuals, right? And it sounds like Kevin Smith, that sort of acknowledgement, that sort of grown-up adult. I just did an episode a couple of episodes ago about Jay-Z, and the comic I was talking to was telling me how much a relief it was that Jay-Z is essentially, I mean, the guy's 45, 50 years old, so he's growing up, you know? He's going to live to be 100 years old, so he has 40 years to not to figure out how not to cheat on his wife and not be a dick. And this, that's incredibly hopeful to me that Kevin Smith has that sort of sanity and that sort of sense of, you know, seeing, because we were all assholes in the 90s, right? I mean, there were things that I said and done, thank you, baby Jesus, that they weren't. And 10 years from now, things that were, that I say now are probably going to be like, hey, jackass, what'd you say that for? And you're like, well, it was funny at the time. So, yeah. That's
cool. Yeah, it's weird. It's weird to have to think about, to apply the rule of tattoos to like what your comedy and what you make jokes of. You know, yeah. If for people listening that don't know, the idea is like, if you're going to get a tattoo, make sure you're as happy with it at 28 as you are when you're wrinkly at 66. You know?
Who did the joke? God, I'm spacing your name. It might be Sarah Benicasa. Anyway, she has a tramp stamp on her back, and she's comic. And she did this joke about how she got that tramp stamp, and before it was called a tramp stamp, and she did it because she loved Jesus. And so it's a butterfly right above her butt, and she said the only way to fix it and is to make it ironic and to put quote marks around it. Which is, that's awesome. It's such a great bit. I can't, Sarah Benicasa, am I right?
I want to say, but I'm not sure.
Fair enough. Welcome to the Dork Forest, where I tend to weed off.
The internet will correct us if we're wrong.
They will. Oh, by the way, Ernie Klein did write Fanboys and Ready Player One.
Yes.
And he has been on the Dork Forest.
I mixed up Ernie Klein, and it's actually, the gentleman's name is Ernie O'Donnell.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's who was in the, it was in the movies. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I like rule of tattoos though.
Yeah.
Do you have any tattoos?
I don't, but I remember the one and only tattoo I ever actually really wanted, which this opens up like a whole other can of worms into my life. I remember my mom, she had like a rose tattoo on her ankle, and she would go in every couple of years to get it like touched up, because she also used tanning beds a lot, so it
okay
would, it would screw up the tattoo, I guess, was the I don't know, it was like 8, and I remember going in to this tattoo parlor with her and flipping through the book, you know, the artist book or whatever, and there was this giant Bart Simpson on a skateboard, and I was like 8, and I was the only tattoo I've ever, and which would not have happened at that age because highly illegal.
Even in Florida, even in Southern Florida, you guys.
My mom was a bad influence. She's the reason I got my ear pierced when I was like 16, which was like a whole other horrific thing of like,
ooh, she took me to infected? A mall.
Yeah. No, but the funny thing is I took it out after not even a day, and somehow the hole stayed open. I still have my piercing, but I never wear a piercing except for, sometimes I'll work someplace long enough, and then one day I'll just randomly walk in with this, and people get massively confused. Or something I've done before, and this speaks to how much of a maniac I am. I'll take a paperclip ahead of time and unfold it, and I'll sanitize it and whatnot, and
thank
I'll
unfold
it, and I'll freak out my coworkers, and I'll just take the planted paperclip and undo it and just put it right through my ear, and they just go, oh my God, what are you doing?
Tetanus shot.
And it's like, I was like, well, I have a hole in my ear. I might as well use it for comedy.
Oh, that's so funny. That is so hilarious.
People go, your ear pierced? It's like, no. just don't pay attention.
I, in the 90s, for a short-lived time, wanted to get Nightwolf from the Mortal Kombat Ultimate video game on my shin. It isn't okay. I look back at it and I cringe, and thank God I never did. I'd be an entirely different person, though I assume that I would own a Harley-Davidson.
I mean, again, it ties back to my other thing of, like, I love animation, and for me, like, when I was like 8 years old, I loved The Simpsons. And the only reason, like, I still remember the first time I ever saw The Simpsons, my grandmother had a VHS copy of two episodes. Remember when, like, they used to release VHSs with, like, only two episodes?
Yeah, and it was a nickel. It was, like, $6. And you thought you were getting a deal, and you kind of weren't.
Yeah, and I remember, it's so funny, I haven't thought about this in so long, but I can see the box was, like, green for some reason, and I can't remember what the second episode was, but I remember distinctly one of the episodes was the one where Marge takes bowling lessons. And I think the bowling instructor is Albert Brooks. And it was like a very, this is like a second, third season episode. And it's like this whole thing of like, oh, she's going to leave Homer for this magnificent bowling instructor. And there's this thing where they share mozzarella sticks. And this is when I was like, what did I say, like six?
Yeah.
This again says a lot about my upbringing. I was watching,
sure.
You know, I was watching a lot of the stuff that like people my age in the 90s were watching in animation, like Johnny Bravo and Rugrats and Hey Arnold. But at the same time, I remember staying up, being like 7 or 8, and staying up till 11:30 at night to watch Space Ghost.
Oh, my God.
Not really understanding what Space Ghost Coast. Like, it's so funny. I've been developing this thing and going back. I've been going back to a lot of stuff in developing this thing to, like, really sink into reference points. And it's so wild now at 29 to watch these episodes of Space Ghost Coast to Coast versus when I was like 8 and just was like, ooh, funny voices and colors.
Nope. What about Beavis and Butthead?
Oh yeah. I watched that. I watched Daria. I watched Free South. I watched Celebrity Deathmatch. I watched Clone High.
You had no choice but to become a theater dork. That's it. You were like, and that's all old soul stuff, you know? I mean, that is like, even if you look at The Simpsons, you're like, it's so weird. I read a study once that said that it was the most popular show in the Latino community, The Simpsons. And they interviewed like thousands of people in the Latino community, or 12, who knows this article, right? And they said that they watched it because it was a complete unit. It was a heterosexual father, mother, kids in a house kind of thing, and they thought that that made it more wholesome. But if you watch The Simpsons, Homer Simpson is a fucking monster. He is the worst dad in the world. And
strangled his kid. They phase that out after a while, but if you go watch those early episodes, he like two-hand strangles Bart.
He is not only an idiot, he is also financially irresponsible, just like violent, stupid, mean, drunken, like all of the, like he's literally the worst fucking guy in the world. But you're like, but he's all right, which is, I am the last generation of women who will be saying that, by the way. He's a nice enough guy.
Fun fact about The Simpsons, it is, to my knowledge, one of only two unscripted shows that premiered the year I was, well, technically it premiered in 89 with the Christmas episode, but it officially premiered the year I was born, which is 1990. The other show that premiered that year that is still on the air is Monday Night Raw.
Oh, wrestling. The wrestling thing.
It says
all
a
right.
lot about the 90s that like the only two shows that
made
it and escape the 90s are wrestling and The Simpsons.
Yeah. It's that third season though was pretty amazing. If I remember, like I watched the first, I think probably 10 or 11 seasons of The Simpsons. And then you know how you just stop watching TV once you hit a certain age for some reason. Are you still watching The Simpsons?
I'm not, but you know, what's funny is that like, I've been real tempted and I used to watch it religiously, Jackie, religiously.
Yeah.
Every son religiously.
You're
and the funny
planned
thing,
around it, yeah.
But because of that, I watched King of the Hill every single week. I watched Family Guy. I watched all of the random 1-2 season things that I, you know what, I was rewatching the other night because for whatever reason I found it on demand. The PJs, the Eddie Murphy stop motion show that was on for 3 years.
Nope, I don't remember that at all. How was it?
It's really weird to watch that show stoned and in HD.
Yeah.
Because it's claymation. So when it aired, like it premiered in 99 and it ran for a couple years after, it was in standard definition.
Right.
It wasn't high def. So now I'm watching high def, which it creates almost this uncanny valley thing because you can really see how clay it all
right.
is.
Oh, yeah.
It's really weird and disorienting. And I was on an edible the other night and I turned this on and I was like, oh man. Weird. It's terribly held up. The premise to begin with is a pretty.
What is the premise?
So the premise is it takes place in a housing project, and Eddie Murphy plays Super, who is the super of the building.
Okay.
And there's a character named Haiti Lady, because she's from Haiti.
Oh, okay.
There's another character that just smokes so much, his face is just always obscured by a cloud of smoke. The lady at HUD is a regular character. I watched like two or three episodes the other night. And I was just like, oh man.
And the writing doesn't hold up? But is it kind of like just, is it easy stuff?
I don't know, but it's also like, I mean, it's clearly, the reason the show got on the air is because somehow Eddie Murphy, well, and also this was one of, Larry Wilmore was a co-creator of this show too.
Oh, okay.
One of his earlier credits. Okay. And then weirdly, Ron Howard and Brian Glazer, I can't ever remember.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Company that had a deal at Fox and I think still does. But that's all to say that, like, I've watched, like, it makes a lot of sense of who I am now on the basis of, like, what I was watching then.
Yeah.
Like, I loved Clone High.
What's that?
I love Clone High.
What is that?
It's on MTV, executive produced by Bill Lawrence. The first real credits that Phil Lord and Chris Miller had, they co-created this show, who have now done Into the Spider-Verse and 21 Jump Street and like everything you've ever loved in like the last 5 to 7 years. The Lego Movie, Last Man on Earth. So the premise of the show is... and it's so great because the theme song spells it all out too. But essentially in the 80s, the government created this cloning program. So they cloned all these famous people and now they all go to high school together. So it's like it's like Cleopatra and Abe Lincoln. It's like the clone of Cleopatra and the clone of Gandhi and the clone of Abe Lincoln and the clone of JFK all going to high school together.
Okay.
And the evil scientist is the principal and he has a... he has a butler robot named Mr. Butlertron. It ran for like a season. It's been that thing that like people have like, it's the only thing I've ever wanted to see brought back or rebooted because it was so ahead of its time and so insane and goofy.
That's
like
cool.
Marilyn Manson is like a guest voice at one point. It's so crazy and insane. And Zach Braff and Donald Faison and Will Forte and all these amazing people worked on it. And they just actually announced that they're rebooting that show. MTV or Comedy Central is like really doubling down on animation.
Okay.
They're bringing that back. It's not a reboot of Daria, but it's taking one of the characters from Daria and centering her in her own show.
How Ender's Shadow of Them. Okay.
Something like that. Jodie, who was like the only black female character on that show. And so this iteration, Tracy Ellis Ross is going to be voicing the character. But
I don't know who that is. Who is that?
Well, Diana Ross's daughter.
Okay. Thank you.
Also on Blackish. If you've
okay.
ever watched
on Blackish. Okay.
But essentially it's funny to watch. You've seen a lot of, like live action stuff being cycled. And now it's interesting to see the anime, like, they're bringing Beavis and Butthead back again. I've heard they're talking about bringing Ugly Americans back on Quibi, which is a great cult show that was on Comedy Central for like 3 years with Matt Oberg and I can't remember her name. It'll come to me like at the Natasha Leggero. It's an early Natasha Leggero credit. Pete Holmes did voices. And it's this really great show done in like the EC Comics kind of style.
Okay.
It takes place in a New York where zombies and werewolves and ghosts and stuff are all real, with okay. like actual people walking around, and it's centered on the main character is leads this support group for creatures. So there's like a fish man, but the upper part is the fish and the lower part is the man. So that's like really great, and I've been rewatching that as a reference to the thing I've been working on. But yeah, it's
that's really a deep dive, man. That is some dive into some anime long boxes.
I wasn't kidding when I said that is like my second dorkdom. Is I mean, you won't see, this is an audio podcast unless you're watching a video, but Jackie will confirm. I have a giant Adult Swim flag hanging over my bedroom.
Right, which is, and people can watch it on YouTube. I've been posting them since quarantine on the YouTube. The only thing I know from Adult Swim was the Venture Brothers. That's the only thing I watched.
Wow. My love of Adult Swim, like, as I was saying, it predates Adult Swim existing. You know, I remember watching Space Ghost Coast to Coast in real time when I was little, and I still remember at the very end, this isn't in some of the reruns or the streaming you can find, they put up, at the end of every episode, you could fax fan letters to Ghost Planet Industries, which was the production company before it became William Street. So I remember distinctly at the end, you would hear, like the dial up,
yeah.
and it would say, fax us Ghost Planet. Like you could, like, and to me, it's like what an early example of like fan engagement before social media or any of that kind of stuff. It was like, literally like, here's how you can fax stuff to the production office, because why not?
What was Ghost Coast to Coast about?
Space Ghost?
Space Ghost was
the idea. So they essentially took, they were like, they had just, Ted Turner had just acquired Hanna-Barbera. And essentially the story is, they were like trying to figure out like what to do with this stuff. And someone took the idea of like, oh, what if we repurpose Space Ghost from like the you know, him being the superhero, what if he's a talk show host and, you know, the villain, the one villain is his band leader and the other villain is the video operator. And it starts, at a certain point, Harvey Birdman gets pulled into it and all of these other kind of like Hanna-Barbera superhero kind of
characters. So it's just clip art essentially from a decade of cartoons, old, repurposed old, and then turned into a talk show.
So, to a degree, they would essentially, so the brilliant thing is all of the guests were live, so they would be on this little screen that would come down. And so the idea would be, they did these interviews in real life, so they had someone dress up as in a Space Ghost costume and interview. And it's crazy if you go back and look at the guests. They had like REM and they had like Emo Phillips. Like, they just like had everyone you would like ever like associate with the 90s on that show.
Yeah.
Like the two guys from Metallica, like it's crazy to go back and watch who said yes to the insanity, especially in the very early stages of this. So the idea would be, they would do this interview and then they would retroscript based on the answers that were given to like very normal questions.
Right.
And it would become like, it's, you know, Eric Andre says that Space Ghost is his biggest influence for the Eric Andre show.
Okay.
In the sense that this chaotic, it's this chaotic talk show concept. But my love of Adult Swim is where that started. And I still remember watching, you know, the first night that like it premiered proper.
Cause it was just a block of time, right?
It was a block of time. So Adult Swim actually officially premiered in December, I believe December 30th of 1999, because of budgetary things, they had to air these pilots before the end of the fiscal year in order for the budget to not get affected. But it doesn't premiere proper until, I believe, September 10th, 2000, which is then when, so they had greenlit several other shows to live in this block, and then they also picked up Home Movies, They had picked up reruns of Baby Blues from Warner Brothers.
What's Home Movies?
Home Movies is the Lauren Picard show that predates Bob's Burgers.
Okay. And what's the blue one?
Baby Blues was a very short-lived cartoon adaptation of the comic strip of the same name.
Okay. You should know that I stopped watching television from like 1995 to 2010.
This is great. This is what this is all about, right?
It's not
about stuff, but it was with Drew Carey, and I believe Diedrich Bader was also a voice. This came out of, you know, the Drew Carey show being on the WB.
ABC,
Synergy. But so that was, and it's crazy to think about, like, when Adult Swim premiered, I was like 9 years old, and like, I'm 29 now, and it's really insane to look at, like, I don't think people, like, you can trace back that the beginning of Adult Swim to stuff like Liquid Television and all of that kind of like MTV early 90s animation stuff. And you're seeing it like impacting stuff now. I think people now are really starting to understand the whole punk DIY CBGB idea of Adult Swim into other animation. Like thinking about like, have you had a chance to watch John Hodgman new cartoon that
no.
he did with David Reese? It's called Dick Town. It was airing on FXX. It's on Hulu.
But okay.
It's John and David as like party boy characters, and they live in this nondescript town called Richardville, but everyone calls it Dick Town.
Sure.
And you watch it and you can clearly see the influence of Archer.
Yeah.
And Archer doesn't happen unless C-Lab 2021 happens through Adult Swim.
You know, when Aisha Tyler was on The Dork Forest, I think in 2007 or 8, maybe 9, I asked her what she was doing. And she was like, Archer? And I was like, what is that? Anyway, I have seen Archer. Archer is very dark and funny and... But I have not seen Dicktown. There's this irreverence in animation that started from that time, that Adult Swim, where it's just like, we can make dick jokes and we can.
Or more so that there is an audience for adult animation in the sense of like past the peg of The Simpsons, South Park, Family Guy.
Like, right. It tends to manifest itself at its most basic level as dick jokes. But there's also anime and manga, right, for every age and every, which I think came in and kind of influenced it, don't you think?
Yeah.
That because manga can be for babies and it could also be porn and it could also be for children, you know, for seniors, and it could be dramatic and it could be not, you know, comedic, or it could be all the things.
Well, that's another kind of brilliant thing that's been happening through Adult Swim right now is that, you know, they revived something called Toonami, which was a very popular anime block of programming that Cartoon Network ran through the late 90s into the early aughts. That's what we're calling it, right? I still don't know.
Sure. What the heck?
Period. And it went away for a very long time. And to his credit, Jason DeMarco, who is always been the one at Adult Swim that's pushed animation. Saturday nights have infamously been the anime night on Adult Swim. He rebooted and he was like, we should bring back Toonami and it should be part of our programming, which has been a huge hit, especially now with Crunchyroll and like how much anime and manga has really impacted the US market. It's such a brilliant thing to the effect that now they are commissioning, I think they're one of the only American broadcast networks that is commissioning anime in the way that they are. Like they're working on a Blade Runner anime sequel series, which is like a huge deal. You know, they were like the only.
I wonder if they're using the comic book, because I'm reading the comic book, which is a follow up to Blade Runner, and of course there was a sequel Blade Runner movie,
right?
And
It's called Blade Runner Black Lotus.
Okay.
It does pull some inspiration from the book.
Yeah.
But more so, like, it's just interesting to watch all of that influence into other things. Like, you know, it's not animation, but like, tell me that every third commercial you see these days isn't inspired by Tim and Eric and their video work in like 2005, 2006.
Right, which I wasn't watching Tim and Eric. And I know Maria Bamford has been on Tim and Eric, and I'm supposed to care because she's my friend. But what is Tim and Eric? Why don't someone should explain this to me.
Tim and Eric is the shorthand of Tim Heidecker and Eric Wareheim. They made weird short films, and Bob Odenkirk caught on to them and was like, oh, this is like the closest thing to what me and David were doing. Like, I'm so on board with this. So the first thing they created was a thing called Tom Goes to the Mayor, which was a very weird show in the sense of the design style. All the characters were fed through dot matrix printers. So they all have this weird blue dot kind of printout look to them.
Right.
It's very cheap and whatnot. But then they created the show called Tim and Eric Awesome Show Great Job, which is a live action sketch show, which just everyone's been on. And that's the first time I ever saw Maria was on that show.
Okay.
And you go back and it's like Ted Danson was on the show. Zach Galifianakis was on that show. It just goes on and on and on. But the thing that set that show apart was the editing aesthetic. It was very much UHF, public access, hiring non-actors as actors, hiring from central casting, so you always got these very weird, interesting people. And like, I just watched a thing today that Paul Rudd did for the city of New York, encouraging people to wear masks. It's a Tim and Eric sketch. The aesthetic, the editing, the pacing, everything. And it was super weird to watch a thing that is essentially an official New York City public service announcement done in that style.
Okay, yeah, that is right. It's the influence of that stuff. I mean, I look at all the influences of, it's all so blurry, you know, like there's all this sort of retroactive, I love, you know, people are stating their love of just sort of pixeled, you know, video games from when I was, you know, in the late 70s and early 80s, where you're like, no, that's the cool thing. We're going to make this video game look like the video games from then. And you're like, yeah, but you could make it look like it's real. And they're like, no, I need it to look 2D. So
that, for me, it's the idea of like, well, who are the people that have disposable income? The people that were kids in the 80s and the 90s, they're the ones that now have
the cash. Space. Yeah.
They're the ones that they're the majority of the market share. So it's like, who, you know, so yeah, why not design the thing that makes someone remember being 11 years old and waking up on Saturday morning and turning on the Super Nintendo or whatever. You
right.
Know?
But what are you going to remember? Are you going to remember the thing that I remember? I mean, that's, yeah, yeah, it's like there's no, like, I grew up in hip hop, right? So my, you know, it's KRS-One and Biggie and all those guys. And so now there's just more hip hop, but they're still referencing that hip hop. And there's no new musical style. I mean, someone just asked if they could talk about English bells, but which is very
like
Middle Ages.
Like the ding dong.
Yeah, the old.
Yeah, like the you see them outside during the holidays.
Yeah, I think so. So maybe that'll too cope. But I don't know what I want. I know that there's so much great new stand up and there's new writing that's happening, right? But it doesn't feel like the tech. Like the tech is going so fast that I think like the new tech nerds are like, we could recreate things from the past so that I can get, you know, that old white dude to give me a giant bag of money to make my new writing, right? The writing is new.
Right. And I mean, I'll bring up something like when this goes out in a couple of weeks, it won't be new news, but this broke. So they just announced that they are doing a animated reboot of Good Times, developed by Carl Jones, who helped bring the Boondocks to TV and like a bunch of other amazing stuff. They just announced that like an hour ago that they're doing an animated reboot of Good Times with Carl Seth MacFarlane and Norman Lear is going to be involved in a producing capacity, which God bless him, because the man's almost 100 years old now.
Right, right. It's like Carl Reiner. What about... weirdest thing that I just saw was that there was some new drama that was coming out, and it was about two things. One, there was a new animated TV show that they just canceled that was a ripoff of Hair Love, which won the short that the Oscar.
The Nick Jr. thing that they claim they had in development before, but they can't produce anything predating when Matthew Carey's Kickstarter ended.
And literally the entire cast and creative crew is, there are no people of color.
Some black creative, as a white woman in like a white producing team.
And a white male team and a white woman team. And you're just like, yeah, just because the PAs are black people, that doesn't count. I'm so sorry. Yeah, you need some creative. And then there was a black-led ensemble cast and no women and no black people in the writer's room. Right. And so you're like...
That was that Netflix, the Netflix series that they just... My buddy...
You're following the news. Good work.
My buddy... I want to produce and I want to be in this realm of stuff, so you know you got to keep tabs. But the thing is, my friend Ming Pfeiffer, who's a brilliant playwright, wrote this amazing play called Usual Girls, which people should read. It's available. She was one of the writers on that show, and she, when they posted the trailer the other day, she was like, "This is a mess, and this is not representative of what was actually going on behind the scenes." And it's very disingenuous that Netflix is, you know, positioning the show as like black voice, black centered, blah blah blah, when behind the scenes all this stuff was going on.
Right. It's just, I mean, the thing is it's an awareness of going forth in the industry and in every industry. How about that? Plumbing. But just try to be more inclusive but especially with storytelling. If you want to tell a story, you know, my husband's a game designer, and he was just talking to a guy about how when he wants to, if he has to write a woman character in level design and there's a storyline to it, how does he write a woman character? You know, everybody gets to write about other people and try to get that perspective, but you have to make sure that you have some sort of input and that you have some sort of empathy, right? It's another job, right? We all have 3,700 jobs now. And if you want to, you're like, no, we should tell these stories about these people. You have to also employ those people.
And to me, it's like, to bring this full circle back around.
Right, because we are at an hour, my friend.
I think the thing that's always inspired me a lot about Kevin Smith is like, he did this, he knew he had a story. He felt that the story would relate to other people. But at its basic level, it's like, even if no one digs it, you know, I did this thing with my friends and, you know, I'm proud of it and et cetera, et cetera. And it's always, that's always instilled this model, this thing to me of like, you know, the way I say it is, I don't wait for someone to open a door for me. I pick up a chainsaw and rip one into the wall.
Right,
you know?
Right. You so, just make the thing. Do the thing.
The thing, you know, don't let people go, that's a stupid idea, or no one's going to watch that, or no one's going to listen to your music, or no, it's like, make it and put it into the universe. If anything, you know, there's a double-edged sword to the internet of like, it brings a lot of bad people together, but
we did not create the internet so that Nazis could meet each other. I swear to God. But that's what's happening.
But what I'm saying is, you know, the flip of it is that, you know, it's so easy. As much as I start to feel like old man on my lawn, like, look how creative people are being on TikTok. Like, you know, the internet has made it so easy.
Technology's there. Use it.
It's made it so easy to get your stuff in front of people and connect to other people. Because, like, who cares if some studio executive isn't into it? If you've got 20,000 people on your Patreon and like they're into your stuff and like you're sustaining yourself, like do it, you know.
You know, all you need, this is a band model from the 70s. If you can get 1,000 people to give you $100 a year, that's $100,000. You get four people in your band, that's $25,000 a year for four people. And
well,
that's
legal expenses and travel. And
well, unless you're, and what that is that's merch sales. That's why bands sold merch. And so if you can get 1,000 people to give you $100 a year on the internet, that's $100,000, you know?
Well, that goes back to the Fugazi, the whole thing with that band was that they were infamous that their shows were $5 for years and years and years and years and years and years because they were like, that's how they built their base. That's how they heard that whoever could come see them. They didn't believe in merch. Some of the shows there weren't even physical tickets for. And my favorite thing, I was just reading a bunch of history about the band. One of my favorite things about that is, you know, they did these $5 shows and they would keep a stack of $5 bills in their tour van so that when they had to pick people out for moshing and being violent, they would just hand them a $5 bill and throw them out of the building.
Oh, perfect. That is awesome. And then, so this is great. This is a great message to go out on, which is that you got to make and do your thing. The other thing that people beat themselves up about, they're like, well, I don't want to start a podcast. There's hundreds of thousands of podcasts. I'm like, yeah, you're not going to make a shitty podcast. Don't worry about it. Make the thing that you love, and it'll be as good or as bad as it's going to be. But if you like it, it genuinely doesn't matter. Just make the thing you want to make and see if anyone gives a shit. That's why I moved to Los Angeles, to see if anyone cared. And so far, everyone's been very polite. Okay.
I mean, everything going on, what do you have to lose by throwing your hat in the creative ring?
You've never had anything to lose.
You know?
You're just going to sit around anyway, so you might as well do the thing you like and put it out there. Jeremy Ween, you are great. This has been fascinating and encouraging and wonderful. And everyone, this my show, THISMYSHOW, this my show, at this my show is his Twitter, playperview.com, right?
Playperview.com, yes.
There we go. And I'll put them both in the notes. And we have been talking about animation and Kevin Smith and all the good things. And thank you so much for being on the show finally, man.
It was a dream come true. It was a pleasure.
Awesome. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?